Well, there's a lot of ways of reading this dialogue between head and heart. For the longest time, historians saw it as the head winning, ultimately, that Jefferson is a rationalist. Others, like Brody and to some extent Gary Wills, have seen just the opposite. It's the heart that has the last word, that once one gets behind Jefferson's mask of stoical manners, there beats a deep and vital heart, a deep romanticism. I would suggest another possibility, that both of those are right, but this is also a love letter. Jefferson is trying to seduce someone with gallant rhetoric, and I think it's very effective. Reading too much into it philosophically may miss the real message that's central to it, the attempt to overcome frigidity through warm spasms. All right, that's the Maria Causeway relationship. Even more conflicted is his emerging and what will become a long-term relationship with his teenage slave and half-sister, sister-in-law, excuse me, Sally Hemings. Because Sally Hemings is, in fact, the daughter of both Betty Hemings, her mother, and John Wales, Jefferson's father-in-law. So he is, in fact, his wife's half-sister. She was born in 1773. Her mother, Betty Hemings, was herself a mulatto. So Sally Hemings is, in fact, three-quarters white. She arrives in the summer of 1787 at the age of 14 as the maid to Jefferson's younger daughter, Maria, known as Polly. Now, historians for a long time have debated whether there was, in fact, a relationship between Hemings and Jefferson. And in fact, it was debated not just by historians, but by contemporaries as well. The allegations of the relationship were established as early as 1802. Recently, genetic tests have made it a bit more probable than it otherwise would have been. But as early as 1974, Fawn Brody presented more than a bit of solid evidence to suggest that without any genetic DNA research, we could conclude that more likely than not, Jefferson had had a relationship with his slave. What is this evidence? Well, once the relationship starts, or presumably once it started, he begins a tour of Holland and the Rhineland. And interestingly, he describes the soil of that region as mulatto, not once or twice, no less than eight times. Then there are the peculiar expenses laid out on Sally Hemings. She's tutored in French. He spends over 216 francs on her clothes in the spring of 89. This is not your traditional house slave dressed in homespun. She wears fine gloves, fine clothing. Perhaps the best evidence of all contemporaneously is as this relationship develops, his daughter Martha, or Patsy, decides she wants to join a convent and become a nun. Finally, there's one last piece of evidence that we really do have to examine, and that is the testimony of his purported son, Madison Hemings, who told his story years later to a northern newspaper. And I want to quote it. "My mother became Mr. Jefferson's concubine, when he was called back home, she was enceinte, or pregnant by him. He desired to bring my mother back to Virginia with him, but she was just beginning to understand the language well. And in France, she was free, while if she returned to Virginia, she would be re-enslaved. She refused to return with him. To induce her to so, he promised her extraordinary privileges and made a solemn pledge that her children should be freed at the age of 21. In consequence of his promises, on which she implicitly relied, she returned with him to Virginia. Soon after their arrival, she gave birth to a child of whom Thomas Jefferson was the father." Well, one of the reasons this is, I think, quite credible testimony is that, in fact, Jefferson did free the Hemings family. He did give Sally Hemings remarkable privileges. That's remarkable because he did not free any of his other slaves. Okay, so that's Jefferson the romantic. I want to turn to Jefferson the political figure, and particularly his political thought, which takes a decided turn to the left while in Paris. His agrarian radicalism becomes extremely pointed. He comes to critique private property. He champions an ever more radical primitivism, and ultimately, violently embraces the right to revolution. So let's begin with that critique of private property. It was the maldistribution of property in France which inspired him to question the unlimited right to private property.